22. The Rules of Engagement.
Oh, Melia, my dear, this does everything crown. Who could have supposed I should meet you in town? And whence such fair garments, such prosperity?
Oh, didn't you know I'd been ruined? Said she.
I wish I had feathers, a fine sweeping gown, and a delicate face, and could strut about town.
My dear, a raw country girl such as you be cannot quite expect that. You ain't ruined, said she. Thomas Hardy, The Ruined Maid. Cordelia had never attended a meeting of the entire enclave before. Her family had moved so frequently until this summer, and she was still underage. Luckily, as many young shadow hunters had been directly involved with the incidents under discussion, the age limit had been waived for the meeting. They had all jumped at the chance to attend. Lucy had even brought her writing materials with her in case she was inspired. The sanctuary had been set up to be a meeting place, with rows of chairs facing a lectern. Golden statues of Raziel were set in each alcove, and Tessa had hung tapestries showing the crests of every London Shadowhunter family on the walls. James and Christopher had both been seated at the front of the room. Every chair was filled, and many were standing. The room was stuffed to bursting. Cordelia had come with her family, but had split off from Alistair and Sonar so she could sit with Lucy and Matthew. Will Herondale stood up at the lectern, handsome in a grey coat and waistcoat with pinstriped trousers. He appeared to be having a friendly argument with Gabriel Lightwood as Tessa looked on. Inquisitor Bridgestock was not far away, glowering. Lucy was quick to point out to Cordelia all those in attendance who had recovered from the poison. Ariadne Bridgestock was there, looking calm and very beautiful in a deep aubergine dress, with a matching bow in her dark hair. Cordelia could not help but remember Anna reaching for Ariadne's hand as Ariadne lay deathly still, her eyes swollen shut. Please don't die. Rosamond Wentworth was also there, as were Anna and Cecily Lightwood, who were playing with little Alexander at the edge of the dry fountain. Alexander appeared to be tossing something shiny and likely breakable into the air. Sophie and Gideon Lightwood, freshly back from Idris, were smiling over at Cecily and little Alex, but Sophie's eyes were sad. Thomas and his sister Eugenia sat close by. Eugenia resembled a sharper version of Barbara. She was small but angular, with dusky hair upswept in a Gibson girl pompadour. Seated at the very edge of the group of shadow hunters, near Mrs. Bridgestock, was Tatiana Blackthorne, rigidly upright in her chair. She had not removed her hat, and the ornate stuffed bird atop it glared menacingly. She was thinner than ever, her hands tightly clenched in her lap, her face rigid with fury. Grace sat some distance from her mother, beside Charles, who was chattering away in her ear. She and Tatiana did not look at each other. Cordelia knew from James that Grace had gone to stop her mother from taking desperate action the night before. It seemed to have worked, but she could not help but wonder what had happened between them, not to mention whether they knew yet of the fate of Blackthorn Manor. The most surprising guest was Magnus Bane, sitting across the room with his legs elegantly crossed. He seemed to sense Cordelia looking at him and glanced over with a wink.
I idolise him, said Matthew sorrowfully.
Lucy patted his hand.
I know.
Matthew looked amused. Cordelia sensed something had changed in his interactions with Lucy. She couldn't quite put a finger on it. It was as if a certain tension had gone out of them.
Welcome, everyone,
Will's voice echoed through the room. The lectern had been carved with runes to amplify his voice.
I've just received word that the consul has been delayed but is on her way. It would be ideal if everyone could be patient a little longer and refrain from breaking any of the valuable objects in the sanctuary.
He shot a meaningful glance at Cecily, who made a sisterly face at him.
In the meantime, Will broke off in surprise as Charles joined him at the lectern. He wore a stiffly formal frock coat, his red hair slicked back and gleaming.
"I'd just like to thank everyone for placing their trust in me as acting consul," he said, his voice echoing off the walls. "As you all know, the antidote to this awful disease was developed in my father's laboratory at Grosvenor Square."
Cordelia glanced over at Alistair. To her pleased surprise, Alistair rolled his eyes.
In fact, if Charles had been hoping for a round of applause, it did not come. The room was silent.
Charles cleared his throat.
"But of course there are many brave shadow hunters who should be acknowledged, in addition to myself. Christopher Lightwood, of course, as well as Cordelia Carstairs and James Herondale."
Tatiana Blackthorn shot to her feet. The bird on her hat trembled. But in that moment she did not seem ridiculous as she often did. She seemed menacing.
"James Herondale is a fraud," she cried in a hoarse voice. "He has ties to demons. No doubt he worked in concert with them to orchestrate these attacks."
Lucy made a choking sound. Her murmur of astonishment raced around the room. Inquisitor Bridgestock looked absolutely flabbergasted. Cordelia looked over at James. He sat frozen, utterly expressionless. Christopher had his hand on James's shoulder, but James had not moved. Matthew's hands closed into fists.
"How dare she?"
Tatiana seemed to tower over the crowd.
"Deny it, boy," she shouted at James. "Your grandfather was a demon."
Cordelia tried not to look at any of the merry thieves, or Lucy either. Surely Tatiana couldn't know about Belial. Surely she was only repeating what the whole clave was already aware of, that Tessa was a warlock and therefore James had demon blood. James kicked his chair back and stood, turning to face the room. Behind him, Will and Tessa stood stunned. Tessa was gripping Will's shoulder as if entreating him not to move.
"I will not deny it," he said in a voice that dripped contempt. "Everyone knows it. It is true. It has always been true, and no one here has tried to hide it."
"Don't you see?" Tatiana raged. "He conspired with the enemy. I have been collecting evidence of his plots."
"Then where is the evidence?"
demanded Will. He was flushed with anger.
"Damn it, Tatiana." "It was in my house," she hissed. "In my house in Idris. I gathered it all, but then this boy, this demon spawn, burned my house to the ground. Why else would he do that, save to protect his secret?"
Cordelia felt as if her heart had stopped. She dared not look at any of the others, not Lucy or Matthew or Thomas. She could not even look at James.
"Tatiana," Gabriel Lightwood said, rising to his feet. And Cordelia thought, of course. He is her brother. "Tatiana, this makes no sense. Why have we heard nothing about this fire if it transpired? In fact, how do you know about it?"
Tatiana's face twisted with rage.
"You've never believed in me, Gabriel. Even when we were children, you didn't believe anything I said. You know as well as I do there is a portal between Blackthorn Manor and Chiswick House. I went through this morning to get some papers and found the manor a smouldering heap of ash."
It was Gideon's turn to rise up. Recent grief had cut deep lines into his face. The look he turned on his sister was flinty.
"That bloody house was a fire trap because you refused to look after it. It was going to burn down eventually. It is very ill done for you to try to drag James into this. Very ill done."
"Enough, all of you,"
shouted Bridgestock. He had moved to the lectern, and his voice echoed loudly through the room.
"James Herondale, is there any truth to what Mrs. Blackthorn says?"
"Of course there isn't,"
Will began. Tatiana's voice rose to a scream.
"He told Grace he did it. Ask her what James said."
"Oh God," whispered Matthew.
His hands gripped the arms of his chair, his fingers white. Lucy had dropped her pen and notebook.
Her hands were shaking. Grace began to get to her feet. Her eyes were cast down. Someone in the crowd shouted that a trial by the mortal sword would clear things up. Tessa was still clutching Will, but looked sick to her stomach. Cordelia chanced to look at James. He was the colour of old ashes, his eyes blazing, his head thrown back. He would not defend himself, she thought. He would never explain. And then there was Grace. What if Grace intended to tell the truth? Charles would throw her over just as he had done to Ariadne. He had no loyalty. She would be easy prey for her mother then. She had so very much to lose. "The fact is," Grace began, in a voice barely above a whisper, "the truth is that James..." Cordelia bolted to her feet. "The truth is that James Herondale did not burn down Blackthorn Manor last night," she said, in a voice so loud she thought they could probably hear her on Fleet Street. "James cannot have been an Idris. He was with me, in my bedroom, all night." The gasp of shock that went around the room would almost have been satisfying, under other circumstances. Sonar slumped against Alistair, burying her head in his chest. Heads whipped around, curious eyes fixed on Cordelia. Her heart beat like a trip hammer. Anna gazed at her with a dumbfounded look. Will and Tessa seemed thunderstruck. Matthew put his face in his hands. Bridgestock was staring at Cordelia in amazement. "Are you quite sure about this, Miss Carstairs?" Cordelia lifted her chin. She knew that she was compromised now in the eyes of all the Enclave. More than compromised, she was ruined. She would never be married. She would be lucky if she was received at parties. Shadowhunters were less strict than mundanes about such matters, but a young woman who spent the night alone with a young man, in her bedroom no less, was not marriage material. "Obviously, I am sure," she said. "Which aspect do you think I am confused about?" Bridgestock flushed. Rosamond Wentworth looked as if today had turned out to be her birthday. Cordelia did not dare glance at James. Tatiana was spluttering. "Grace, tell them!" In a clear voice, Grace said, "I am sure Cordelia is correct. James must be innocent." Tatiana screamed. It was a horrible sound, as if she had been stabbed. "No," she wailed. "If it wasn't James, it was one of you." She stabbed her finger at the crowd, identifying the thieves. "Matthew Fairchild, Thomas Lightwood, Christopher Lightwood. One of them is responsible, I know it." Murmurs of speculation swept through the crowd. Bridgestock was calling out for order. As the chaos mounted, the front doors of the sanctuary opened, and Charlotte Fairchild, the consul, marched into the room. She was a small woman, her dark brown hair gathered into a simple knot. There was grey at her temples. She wore a high-necked white blouse and a dark skirt. Everything about her was neat and small, from her boots to her gold-rimmed spectacles. "I'm sorry to arrive late," she said, in the practiced tone of someone used to pitching her voice loudly to be heard over a room full of men. "I was planning to be here earlier, but I was required to remain in Idris in order to investigate a fire that claimed Blackthorn Manor last night." I told you they did it," Tatiana cried. Charlotte pressed her lips together. "Mrs. Blackthorn, I spent several hours with a group of Alicante guards, picking through the wreckage of your home. There were many items present that were associated with and imbued with necromantic magic and demonic magic, both of which are forbidden to shadow hunters." Tatiana's face folded up like old paper. "I had to have those things," she wailed, in a voice like a broken child's. "I had to use those things. I had to have them for Jesse. My son died, and none of you would help me. He died, and none of you would help me bring him back." She gazed around the room with wet, hateful eyes. "Grace,
Why won't you help me?
She shrieked and crumpled to the floor. Grace picked her way across the room to Tatiana. She laid a hand on her adoptive mother's shoulder, but her face was stony. Cordelia could see no sympathy in it for Tatiana's plight.
I can confirm what Charlotte says.
It was Magnus Bane, who had gotten gracefully to his feet.
In January, Mrs. Blackthorne attempted to hire me to help her bring her son back from the dead. I declined, but saw much evidence of her dedication to the study of the necromantic arts, what many would call black magic. I should have said something then, but my heart was wrung with pity. Many wish to bring back their beloved dead. Few ever get very far.
He sighed.
When such objects fall into the hands of the untutored, it can be dangerous. Certainly that explains the tragic and entirely accidental fire that destroyed Mrs. Blackthorne's manor house.
There were yet more exclamations among the crowd.
Laying it on a bit thick, isn't he?
Lucy murmured.
Hardly matters, as long as the Clave believes it, Matthew said.
Will inclined his head to Magnus. Cordelia had the feeling there was a friendship there that went back a long way. Amid the uproar, Charlotte gestured at Inquisitor Bridgestock to take Tatiana into custody. A hand fell on Cordelia's shoulder. She looked up and saw James. Everything inside her chest seemed to tighten up, as if her heart was contracting. He was pale, two spots of colour burning on his cheeks.
Cordelia, he said, I need to talk to you. Right now.
James slammed the door of the drawing room shut behind him and spun to face Cordelia. His hair actually seemed to have exploded, she thought, with a sort of bleak amusement. It was sticking out darkly in all directions.
You cannot do this to yourself, Daisy, he said with a cold desperation. You must take it back.
There is no taking it back, she said, as James paced in front of the fireplace. There was no fire lit, but the room was not chilly. Outside, the sun shone brightly, and the world went about its business on a bright London day.
Cordelia, James said, you will be ruined.
I know that. A cold calm had descended upon her. That is why I said what I said, James. I needed to be believed, and no one would believe that I would say such a terrible thing about myself unless it was true. He stopped pacing. The look he bent on her was agonized, as if he were being pierced by a thousand small daggers. Is this because I saved your life? He whispered. You mean last night? At the manor? He nodded. Oh, James. She felt suddenly very weary. No, it was not that. Do you think I could sit by and watch myself acclaimed a hero while you were made a villain? I don't care what they think of my honour. I know you, and your friends, and what you would do for each other. I am also your friend, and I know what I think honour is. Let me do this.
Daisy, he said.
And she realized with a sort of shock that the mask was off. His expression was starkly vulnerable.
I can't bear it. To have your life ruined by this.
Let's go back now and tell them I did it. I burned down the house and you were lying to shield me. Cordelia set her hand against a chair, upholstered in pale blue, and the back carved with crossed swords, to hold herself steady. Nobody will believe it, she said, dropping each word into the silence between them like stones into a pond. She saw him flinch. When it comes to a woman's reputation, if she is suspected, she is guilty. That is the way the world works. I knew they would believe I was guilty, and now, no matter what we say, they'll never believe I was innocent. It's done, James. It doesn't matter so very much. I needn't stay in London, I can go back to the country. As she spoke, she knew that that was how it must be. She was not Anna, able to live a wild bohemian lifestyle with her family's support. She must go back to Sirenworth,
where she talked to mirrors for companionship. She would drown slowly in loneliness, and there would be no dream of London to live on. No devil tavern, no battling demons alongside Lucy, no laughing late into the night with the thieves. James's eyes blazed. "Absolutely not," he said. "And let Lucy's heart be broken because she's lost her parabatai? Let you live a secluded life of disgrace? I will not accept that." "I cannot regret my choice," Cordelia said softly. "I would do the same again. And there is nothing either of us can do about it now, James." He could not make the world fair, any more than she could. It was only in stories that heroes were rewarded. In real life, acts of heroism went unrewarded or were punished, and the world turned on as it always had. He might be angry, but he was safe. She wasn't sorry. "I can ask one last thing of you," he said. "One last sacrifice for me." Since it might be the last time she ever saw him, Cordelia let her eyes linger on James's face. The curve of his mouth, the arch of his high cheekbones, the long lashes that shadowed his pale gold eyes. That faint mark of the white star on his neck, just where his dark hair nearly touched his collar. "What?" Cordelia said. "If it is in my power, I will do it." He took a step toward her. She could see that his hands were shaking slightly. A moment later, he was kneeling on the rug in front of her, his head tipped back, his eyes fixed on her face. She realized what he was about to do and lifted her hands to protest, but it was already too late. "Daisy," he said, "will you marry me?" The world seemed to stop. She thought of the clocks in Blackthorn Manor, all frozen at 8:40. She thought of the 1,000 times she had imagined James saying these words, but never under these circumstances. Never like this. "James," she said, "you don't love me." He rose to his feet. He was no longer kneeling, and she was glad for it, but he was still close to her. So close to her she could have reached out and set her palm against his chest. "No," he said, "I don't." She knew that. Hearing him say it felt like a blow, unexpected and shocking, like the moment when you were stabbed. The surprise was how much it hurt. Distantly, she could still hear him talking. "Not in that way, and you don't love me that way either," James continued. Oh, James, so brilliantly clever and so blind. "But we are friends, aren't we?" he said. "You are one of the best friends I've ever had. I will not leave you in trouble alone." "You love Grace," Cordelia whispered, "don't you?" She saw him flinch then. It was her turn to hurt him. They were only talking, but it was as if their words were blades. "Grace is marrying someone else," James said. "I am perfectly free to marry you." He caught her hand and she let him. She felt dizzy, as if she were clinging to the mast of a storm-tossed ship. "I also do not want a situation in which my husband is unfaithful to me," Cordelia said. "I will not marry you and turn some blind eye to whatever you do, James. I would rather be alone and scorned, and you would rather be free." "Daisy," James said, "I would never, ever do that to you. When I make a promise, I keep it." She shook her head.
"I don't understand what you're proposing."
"A year," he said rapidly. "Give me a year to make things right. Let us be married and live together as friends. We are exceptionally compatible, Daisy. It might well be a great deal of fun. I promise I will be better breakfast table company than Alistair." Cordelia blinked.
"A mariage blanc," she said slowly.
White marriages usually took place when one partner needed to marry to claim an inheritance or to protect a woman against a dangerous situation in her home. There were other reasons too. Charles was seeking something very like this with Grace, she thought. It was hard to miss the irony.
Divorce is far more accepted among shadow hunters than among mundanes, said James. In a year, you may divorce me for any reason you like. Claim I cannot give you children. Say anything you want about how we are not compatible, and I will go along with it. Then you will be a desirable divorcee with your honour intact. You could marry again. The relief and hope in his eyes were agony to see, and yet Cordelia could not say she did not want it. If they were married, they would live together. They would have their own house, an untold level of intimacy. They would go to sleep in the same place and wake in the same place. It would be a life lived in the guise of everything she had ever desired.
But what about our friends? She whispered. We cannot hide the truth from them for a year. Besides, they know I was lying. They know you burned down the manor.
We will tell them the truth, said James. They will keep our secret. They may even find it a great prank on the Clave. And they will be delighted to have a whole house to disport themselves in. We shall have to guard our china.
Lucy as well, Cordelia said. I cannot lie to my parabatai.
Of course, James said, beginning to smile. Our friends love us and will keep our secrets. Are we agreed? Or shall I go back on my knees?
No, Cordelia said sharply. Do not go on your knees, James. I will marry you, but don't go on your knees.
Of course, he said, and the understanding in his eyes cracked what was left of her heart. You wish to save such things for the true marriage you will find after this. Love will find you, Daisy. It is only a year.
Yes, she said. Only a year.
He drew off the Herondale ring with its pattern of soaring birds. She held out her hand, and James slid it onto her finger without hesitation. Cordelia watched as he did it, watched the fall of his long lashes against his cheek, like black ink against a white page. Love will find you. Love had found her years ago, and now, and every day since she had first seen James in London. You don't love me, he'd said to her. He had no idea. He never would. The door opened. Cordelia started, and Will came through the door, his face like thunder. Tessa followed him more sedately, and Sonar came after her. All wore expressions of grim fury. Well, perhaps not Tessa. She looked more worried, Cordelia thought, and more resigned.
Tatiana has been taken into custody by Bridgestock and the Consul, Will announced, his blue eyes icy. Under other circumstances, this would be a great relief, considering her false accusations against you, James.
James held up a hand.
Father, I understand why you're angry, but... James!
Will snapped the word like a whip. There was more than anger in his eyes, though. There was a deep hurt that made Cordelia want to cringe. She could only imagine the pain James was feeling.
I can't express how disappointed Tessa and I are in you. We have taught you better than this, both in how you treat women and in how you own up to your mistakes.
Oh, Leila, Sonar said.
Her gaze was bleak.
Chekar Kadi, what have you done?
Enough.
James moved protectively in front of Cordelia, but Cordelia stepped forward to stand next to him. They should face trouble side by side. If their agreement meant nothing else, it should mean that.
Father, said James. Mother, Mrs. Carstairs. I will hear anything you have to say and apologize for all that I have done wrong. But first, let me present to you my promised wife.
The three adults exchanged surprised glances.
You mean?
Tessa began. James smiled. He actually looked quite happy, Cordelia thought, but she could sense the mask going up again, like a sheet of glass. She saw the way Tessa looked at James and wondered if she sensed it too.
Cordelia has done me the honour of agreeing to marry me.
Cordelia held out her hand, on which the Herondale ring gleamed.
We are both, she said, very happy, and we hope you will be happy too. She glanced at her mother. To her surprise, Sonar's eyes were troubled. But I did as you wished, Maman, she cried out silently. I made a good marriage. Both Will and Tessa were looking at Sonar as if waiting for her reaction. Cordelia's mother exhaled slowly and straightened, her dark eyes passing from Cordelia to James. Cheshme Roshan, she said, and inclined her head toward Will and Tessa. I have given my blessing. A broad smile spread across Will's face. Then we have no choice but to give our blessing too. Cordelia Carstairs, he said. The Carstairs and the Herondales will be bonded even more closely now. If James could have chosen his wife from all the women in the worlds that are or ever were, I would wish for no other. Tessa laughed. Will, you cannot compliment our new daughter only on the chance of her last name. Will was grinning like a boy. Wait until I tell Jem. The door burst open and Lucy spilled in.
I was just listening at the door, she announced with no shame whatsoever. Daisy, you are to be my sister.
She raced to Cordelia and embraced her. Alistair came into the room too, quiet but smiling when Cordelia looked at him. It was so close to the joyous scene Cordelia had always dreamed of. She had only to try to forget that Will might have wished for her to join his family, but if James had been free to choose, he would have chosen someone else. It was only later that night that Cordelia learned what had happened to Tatiana from Alistair, who, she assumed, had heard the story from Charles. Tatiana had been shown relative leniency. It was the general opinion of the Enclave that the death of her son had broken her mind, and that though what she had done in response, sought out the help of dark warlocks to engage with her in necromancy and dark magic, was reprehensible, she had been maddened by grief. They all recalled the loss of Jessie and pitied her. Rather than be locked up in the Silent City or have her mark stripped, Tatiana would be sent to live with the Iron Sisters in the Adamant Citadel. Almost prison, but not quite, as Alistair described it. Grace would move in with the Bridgestocks. Apparently Ariadne had insisted. Alistair theorised that it was also a way for the Bridgestocks to save face and make it look as if Ariadne and Charles's engagement had been dissolved amicably. How odd, said Cordelia. She wondered why Ariadne had made such a demand. Even if she didn't want to marry Charles, why would she want to live with Grace? Then again, Cordelia suspected there was more to pretty Ariadne Bridgestock than met the eye. There is more, Alistair said. He was sitting at the foot of his sister's bed. Cordelia was propped against her pillows, brushing out her long hair. Our father is to be released.
Released?
Cordelia sat bolt upright, her heart pounding.
What do you mean?
The charges against him have been resolved, said Alistair. The whole messy business deemed an accident. He will be returning to London in a fortnight.
Why would they let him go free, Alistair?
He smiled at her, though his eyes did not light up. Because of you, just as you wanted. You did it, Cordelia. You are a hero now. That changes things. For them to try your father for a crime of negligence he no longer remembers, it would be an unpopular gesture. People want to see things set right after so much loss and horror. They want to see families reunited, even more so because of the baby.
How do they know about the baby?
Alistair's eyes darted away from hers. His tell, the small sign that he was lying, which he had displayed since he was a small child. I don't know. Someone must have told them. Cordelia could not speak. It was all she had wanted for so long. Free her father, save her family. It had been her mantra, the words she had chanted over and over to herself as she fell asleep at night. Now she did not know how she felt.
Alistair,
she whispered. The reason I went to the Silent City with Matthew and James was to talk to Cousin Jem. I know Maman wanted Father to go to the Basilius as a patient. I thought perhaps if we told the Clave of his sickness, and it is a sickness, they might let him be treated there instead of imprisoned.
Ah, by the angel, Cordelia.
Alistair covered his eyes with his hands for a long moment. When he dropped them, his dark eyes were troubled.
You would have been all right with that? With everyone knowing about his drinking?
As I said to you before, Alistair, it is not our shame, it is his.
Alistair sighed. I don't know. Father always refused to go to the Basilius. He said he disliked the Silent Brothers, but I think he was always worried they would see through him to the truth. I imagine that is why he always kept Cousin Jem away from our family.
He took a deep breath.
If what you want is for him to go to the Basilius, you should write to him and tell him so. You were the last of the family who did not know his secret. That you do now might well make a difference.
Cordelia set her hairbrush down, relief coursing through her at last. That is a good idea, Alistair.
Are you happy, Layla? He said.
He pointed to the Herondale ring on her hand.
I know that is what you wanted.
I thought you might be angry, she said. You were so furious with James when you thought he was trying to compromise me.
I did not think at the time that he would be willing to marry you, Alistair said apologetically. But he has stood up and claimed you in front of the world. That is a gesture that is meaningful. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
She almost wanted to tell Alistair the truth, that James was sacrificing more than he guessed, but she could not, any more than she could tell her mother. He would be angry. Sonar would be crushed.
I have what I wanted, she said, unable to bring herself to say that she was happy. But what of you, Alistair? What of your happiness?
He glanced down at his hands. When he looked back up at her, his smile was crooked.
Love is complicated, he said, isn't it?
I know I love you, Alistair, Cordelia said. I should not have eavesdropped on you and Charles. I have only ever wanted you to talk to me, not to overhear you.
Alistair flushed and rose to his feet, avoiding her eyes. You should sleep, Layla, he said. You've had an eventful day, and I have an important matter to attend to.
Cordelia leaned forward to glimpse him as he left the room.
What kind of important matter?
He ducked his head back into the room with a rare grin.
My hair, he said, and vanished before she could ask him anything else.